Chapter 27 Teleron Riod. The room Egwene had been given, on the same gallery with Nynaeve and Elaine, was little different from Nynaeve's. Her bed was a trifle wider, her table a little smaller. Her bit of rug had flowers instead of scrolls. That was all. After the novices' quarters, it seemed like a room in a palace, but when the three of them gathered there late that night, Egwene wished she were back on the novice galleries, with no ring on her finger and no bands on her dress. The others looked as nervous as she felt. They had worked in the kitchens for two more meals, and in between tried to puzzle out the meaning of what they had found in the storeroom. Was it a trap, or an attempt to divert the search? Did the Armorlin know of the things, and if she did, why had she not mentioned them? Talking provided no answers, and the Armorlin never appeared, so they could ask her. Varen had come into the kitchens after the midday meal, blinking as if she were not sure why she was there. When she saw Egwene and the other two on their knees among the cauldrons and kettles, she looked surprised for a moment, then walked over and asked, loud enough for anyone to hear, "Have you found anything?" Elaine, with her head and shoulders inside a huge soup kettle, banged her head on the rim, backing out. Her blue eyes seemed to take up her entire face. "Nothing but grease and sweat, Aes Sedai," Nynaeve said. The tug she gave her braid left a smear of greasy soap suds on her dark hair, and she grimaced. Varen nodded as if that were the answer she had been seeking. "Well, keep looking." She peered around the kitchen again, frowning as though puzzled to find herself there, and left. Alana came to the kitchens after midday, too, collecting a bowl of big green gooseberries and a pitcher of wine, and Elida, then Shiriam, appeared after supper, and Anaya, too. Alana had asked Egwene if she wanted to know more of the green Aja, inquired when they were going to get on with their studies. Just because the accepted chose their own lessons and pace did not mean they were not supposed to do any at all. The first few weeks would be bad, of course, but they had to choose, or the choosing would be done for them. Elida merely stood for a time, stern-faced and staring at them, hands on her hips, and Shiriam did the same in almost the identical pose. Anaya stood the same way, but her look was more concerned, until she saw them glancing at her. Then her face became a match for Elida's and Shiriam's before her. None of those visits meant anything that Egwene could see. The mistress of novices certainly had reason to check on them, as well as on the novices working in the kitchens, and Elida had reason to keep an eye on the daughter heir of Andor. Egwene tried not to think of the Aes Sedai's interest in Rand. As for Alana, she was not the only Aes Sedai who came for a tray to take back to her rooms, rather than eat with the others. Half the sisters in the tower were too busy for meals, too busy to take the time to summon a servant to fetch a tray. And Anaya? Anaya could well be concerned for her dreamer, not that she would do anything to ease a punishment set by the Armorlin seat herself. That could have been Anaya's reason for coming. It could have been. Hanging her dress in the wardrobe, Egwene told herself once again that even Varen's slip could have been perfectly ordinary. The brown sister was often absent-minded. If it was a slip. Sitting on the edge of her bed, she pulled up her shift and began rolling down her stockings. She was almost beginning to dislike white as much as she did gray. Nynaeve stood in front of the fireplace with Egwene's pouch in one hand, tugging her braid. Elaine sat by the table, making nervous conversation. "Green Aja," the golden-haired woman said, for what Egwene thought must be the 20th time since midday. "I might choose Green Aja myself, Egwene. Then I can have 3 or 4 warders, perhaps marry one of them. Who better for Prince Consort of Andor than a warder? Unless it is..." She trailed off, blushing. Egwene felt a pang of jealousy she thought she had put down long ago, and sympathy mixed with it. "Light, how can I be jealous when I cannot look at Galad without shivering and feeling as if I am melting, both at the same time? Rand was mine, but no more. I wish I could give him to you, Elaine, but he is not for either of us, I think. It may be all well and good for the daughter heir to marry a commoner, as long as he's an Andor man, but not to marry the dragon reborn." She let the stockings fall on the floor, telling herself there were more important things to worry about tonight than neatness. "I'm ready, Nynaeve." Nynaeve handed her the pouch and a long, thin strip of leather. "Perhaps it will work for more than one at once. I could go with you, perhaps." Emptying the stone ring onto her palm, Egwene threaded the leather strip through it, then tied it around her neck. The stripes and flecks of blue and brown and red seemed more vivid against the white of her shift. "And leave Elaine to watch over the both of us alone, when the Black Aja may know us?" "I can do it," Elaine said stoutly. "Or let me go with you, and Nynaeve can keep guard. She is the strongest of us when she's angry, and if there is need for a guard, you can be sure she will be." Egwene shook her head. "What if it won't work for two? What if two of us trying makes it not work at all? We would not even know till we woke up, and then we've wasted the night. We cannot waste even one if we are to catch up. We're too far behind them already." They were valid reasons, and she believed them, but there was another, closer to her heart. "Besides, I'll feel better knowing both of you are watching over me in case—" She did not want to say it. "In case someone came while she was asleep. The Grey Men. The Black Aja. Any one of the things that had turned the White Tower from a place of safety to a dark woods full of pits and snares. Something coming in while she lay there helpless. Their faces showed they understood." As she stretched herself out on the bed and plumped a feather pillow behind her head, Elaine moved the chairs, one to either side of the bed. Nynaeve snuffed the candles one by one, then, in the dark, sat in one of the chairs. Elaine took the other. Egwene closed her eyes and tried to think sleepy thoughts, but she was too conscious of the thing lying between her breasts, far more conscious than of any soreness remaining from her visit to Shiriam's study. The ring seemed to weigh as much as a brick now, and thoughts of home and quiet pools of water all slid apart with remembrance of it. Of Teleron Riad, the unseen world, the world of dreams, waiting just the other side of sleep. Nynaeve began to hum softly. Egwene recognized a nameless, wordless tune her mother used to hum to her when she was little. When she was lying in bed, in her own room, with a fluffy pillow and warm blankets, and the mingled smells of rose oil and baking from her mother, and, "Rand, are you all right? Perrin? Who was she?" Sleep came. She stood among rolling hills, quilted with wildflowers and dotted with small thickets of leafy trees in the hollows and on the crests. Butterflies floated above the blossoms, wings flashing yellow and blue and green, and two larks sang to each other nearby. Just enough fluffy white clouds drifted in a soft blue sky, and the breeze held that delicate balance between cool and warm that came only a few special days in spring. It was a day too perfect to be anything but a dream. She looked at her dress and laughed delightedly. Exactly her favorite shade of sky blue silk, slashed with white in the skirt, that changed to green as she frowned momentarily, sewn with rows of tiny pearls down the sleeves and across the bosom. She stuck out a foot just to peek at the toe of a velvet slipper. The only jarring note was the twisted ring of multicolored stone hanging around her neck on a leather cord. She took the ring in her hand and gasped. It felt as light as a feather. If she tossed it up, she was sure it would drift away like thistledown. Somehow she did not feel afraid of it any longer. She tucked it inside the neck of her dress to get it out of the way. "So this is Verin's Teleron Riad," she said. "Corianna Nadil's world of dreams. It does not look dangerous to me." But Verin had said it was. Black Aja or not, Egwene did not see how any Aes Sedai could tell a lie right out. She could be mistaken. But she did not believe Verin was. Just to see if she could, she opened herself to the one power. Saidar filled her. Even here it was present. She channeled the flow lightly, delicately, directed it into the breeze, swirling butterflies into fluttering spirals of color, into circles linked with circles. Abruptly she let it go. The butterflies settled back, unconcerned by their brief adventure. Myrdral and some other shadow spawn could sense someone channeling. Looking around, she could not imagine such things in that place, but just because she could not imagine them did not mean they were not there. And the Black Aja had all those Terangreal studied by Corian and Nadil. It was a sickening reminder of why she was there. "At least I know I can channel," she muttered. "I'm not learning anything standing here. Perhaps if I look around..." She took a step, and was standing in the dank, dark hallway of an inn. She was an innkeeper's daughter. She was sure it was an inn. There was not a sound, and all the doors along the hall were shut tight. Just as she wondered who was behind the plain wooden door in front of her, it swung silently open. The room within was bare, and cold wind moaned through open windows, stirring old ash on the hearth. A big dog lay curled up on the floor, shaggy tail across its nose, between the door and a thick pillar of rough-cut black stone that stood in the middle of the floor. A large, shaggy-haired young man sat leaning back against the pillar in only his small clothes, head lolling as if asleep. A massive black chain ran around the pillar and across his chest, the ends gripped in his clenched hands. Asleep or not, his heavy muscles strained to hold that chain tight, to prison himself against the pillar.
"Perrin?" she said wonderingly. She stepped into the room. "Perrin, what's the matter with you?"
"Perrin!" The dog uncurled itself and stood. It was not a dog, but a wolf, all black and gray, lips curling back from glistening white teeth, yellow eyes regarding her as they might have a mouse. A mouse it meant to eat. Egwene stepped back hastily into the hall in spite of herself.
"Perrin, wake up! There's a wolf!"
Varen had said what happened here was real and showed the scar to prove it. The wolf's teeth looked as big as knives.
"Perrin, wake up! Tell it I'm a friend!"
She embraced Saidar. The wolf stalked nearer. Perrin's head came up, his eyes opened drowsily. Two sets of yellow eyes regarded her. The wolf gathered himself.
"Hopper!"
Perrin shouted.
"No, Egwene!"
The door swung shut before her face, and total darkness enveloped her. She could not see, but she felt sweat beading on her forehead, not from heat.
"Light, where am I? I don't like this place. I want to wake up."
A whirring sound, and she jumped before she recognized a cricket. A frog gave a bass croak in the darkness, and a chorus answered it. As her eyes adapted, she dimly made out trees all around her. Clouds blanketed the stars, and the moon was a thin sliver. Off to her right through the woods was another glow, flickering, a campfire. She considered a moment before moving. Wanting to wake up had not been enough to take her away from Teleron Riod, and she still had not found out anything useful. And she had not been hurt in any way. So far, she thought, shivering. But she had no idea who, or what, was at that campfire.
It could be Myrdral. Besides, I'm not dressed for running around in the forest.
It was the last thought that decided her. She prided herself on knowing when she was being foolish. Taking a deep breath, she gathered up her silken skirts and crept closer. She might not have Nynaeve's skill at woodcraft, but she knew enough to avoid stepping on dead twigs. At last she peered carefully around the trunk of an old oak at the campfire. The only one there was a tall young man, sitting and staring into the flames.
Rand.
Those flames did not burn wood. They did not burn anything that she could see. The fire danced above a bare patch of ground. She did not think they even scorched the soil. Before she could move, Rand raised his head. She was surprised to see he was smoking a pipe, a thin ribbon of tabak smoke lifting from the bowl. He looked tired, so very tired.
"Who's out there?" he demanded loudly. "You've rustled enough leaves to wake the dead, so you might as well show yourself."
Egwene's lips compressed, but she stepped out.
"I did not. It's me, Rand. Do not be afraid. It is a dream. I must be in your dreams."
He was on his feet so suddenly that she stopped dead. He seemed in some way larger than she remembered, and a touch dangerous. Perhaps more than a touch. His blue-gray eyes seemed to burn like frozen fire.
"Do you think I don't know it is a dream?" he sneered. "I know that makes it no less real." He stared angrily out into the darkness as if looking for someone.
"How long will you try?" he shouted at the night. "How many faces will you send? My mother, my father, now her. Pretty girls won't tempt me with a kiss, not even one I know. I deny you, father of lies. I deny you."
"Rand," she said uncertainly, "it's Egwene. I am Egwene."
There was a sword in his hands, suddenly, out of nowhere. Its blade was worked out of a single flame, slightly curved and graven with a heron. "My mother gave me honey cake," he said in a tight voice, "with the smell of poison rank on it. My father had a knife for my ribs. She offered kisses and more."
Sweat slicked his face. His stare seemed enough to set her afire.
"What do you bring?"
"You are going to listen to me, Randall Thor, if I have to sit on you."
She gathered Sidar, channeled the flows to make the air hold him in a net. The sword spun in his hands, roaring like an open furnace. She grunted and staggered. It felt as if a rope stretched too tight had broken and snapped back into her. Rand laughed.
"I learn, you see. When it works," he grimaced and started toward her. "I could stand any face but that one." "Not her face, burn you!"
The sword flashed out. Egwene fled. She was not sure what it was she did or how, but she found herself back among the rolling hills under a sunny sky, with larks singing and butterflies playing. She drew a deep, shuddering breath.
"I've learned..."
"What?"
"That the Dark One is still after Rand? I knew that already. That maybe the Dark One wants to kill him? That's different. Unless maybe he's gone mad already and does not know what he is saying. Light, why couldn't I help him? Oh, Light, Rand!"
She took another long breath to calm herself. "The only way to help him is to gentle him," she muttered. "As well go ahead and kill him." Her stomach twisted and knotted. "I'll never do that. Never!" A redbird had perched on a cloudberry bush nearby, crest lifting as it tilted its head to watch her cautiously. She addressed the bird.
"Well, I am not helping anything standing here talking to myself, am I? Or talking to you, either."
The redbird took wing as she stepped toward the bush. It was still a flash of crimson as she took the next step, vanished into a thicket as she took a third. She stopped and fished the stone ring on its cord out of the front of her dress. Why was it not changing? Everything had changed so fast up till now that she could hardly catch her breath. Why not now? Unless there was some answer right here. She looked around uncertainly. The wildflowers taunted her, and the lark song mocked her. This place seemed too much of her own making. Determined, she tightened her hand around the Turangrial.
"Take me where I need to be."
She shut her eyes and concentrated on the ring. It was stone, after all. Earth should give her some feeling for it.
"Do it. Take me where I need to be."
Once again she embraced Sidar, fed a trickle of the one power into the ring. She knew it did not need any flow of power directed at it to work, and she did not try to do anything to it, only to give it more of the power to use.
"Take me to where I can find an answer. I need to know what the Black Aja wants. Take me to the answer."
"Well, you've found your way at last, child. All sorts of answers here."
Egwene's eyes snapped open. She stood in a great hall, its vast domed ceiling supported by a forest of massive red stone columns, and hanging in midair was a sword of crystal, gleaming and sparkling as it slowly revolved. She was not certain, but she thought it might be the sword Rand had been reaching for in that dream. That other dream. This all felt so real, she had to keep reminding herself it was a dream, too. An old woman stepped out of the shadows of the column, bent and hobbling with a stick. Ugly did not begin to describe her. She had a bony, pointed chin, an even bonier, sharper nose, and it seemed there were more warts growing hairs on her face than there was face.
"Who are you?" Egwene said.
The only people she had seen so far in Teleron Riad were those she already knew, but she did not think she could have forgotten this poor old woman.
"Just poor old Sylvie, my lady," the old woman cackled. At the same time, she managed a stoop that might have been meant for a curtsy, or possibly a cringe. "You know poor old Sylvie, my lady. Served your family faithfully all these years. Does this old face still frighten you? Don't let it, my lady. It serves me when I need it as good as a prettier."
"Of course it does," Egwene said. "It's a strong face, a good face."
She hoped the woman believed it. Whoever this Sylvie was, she seemed to think she knew Egwene. Perhaps she knew answers, too.
"Sylvie, you said something about finding answers here."
"Oh, you've come to the right place for answers, my lady. The heart of the stone is full of answers and secrets. The High Lords would not be pleased to see us here, my lady. Oh, no. None but the High Lords enter here, and servants, of course."
She gave a sly, screeching laugh.
"The High Lords don't sweep and mop, but who sees a servant?"
"What kind of secrets?"
But Sylvie was hobbling toward the crystal sword.
"Plots," she said, as if to herself. "All of them pretending to serve the great lord, and all the while plotting and planning to regain what they lost. Each one thinking he or she is the only one plotting. Ishamael is a fool."
"What?" Egwene said sharply. "What did you say about Ishamael?"
The old woman turned to present a crooked, ingratiating smile.
"Just a thing poor folks say, my lady. It turns the Forsaken's power, calling them fools. Makes you feel good and safe. Even the shadow can't take being called a fool. Try it, my lady. Say, Balzamon is a fool."
Egwene's lips twitched on the edge of a smile.
"Balzamon is a fool. You are right, Sylvie."
It actually did feel good, laughing at the Dark One. The old woman chuckled. The sword revolved just beyond her shoulder.
"Sylvie, what is that?"
"Kalandor, my lady. You know that, don't you? The sword that cannot be touched."
Abruptly, she swung her stick behind her. A foot from the sword, the stick stopped with a dull thwack and bounded back. Sylvie grinned wider.
"The sword that is not a sword, though there's precious few knows what it is. But none can touch it save one. They saw to that who put it here. The dragon reborn will hold Kalandor one day and prove to the world he's the dragon by doing it. The first proof, anyway. Luz Theron come back for all the world to see and grovel before. Ah, the High Lords don't like having it here. They like nothing to do with the power. They'd rid themselves of it if they could. If they could. I suppose there's others would take it if they could. What wouldn't one of the Forsaken give to hold Kalandor?"
Egwene stared at the sparkling sword. If the prophecies of the dragon were true, if Rand was the dragon as Moiraine claimed, he would wield it one day, though from the rest of what she knew of the prophecies concerning Kalandor, she could not see how it could ever come to be. But if there's a way to take it, maybe the Black Aja knows how. If they know it, I can figure it out. Cautiously, she reached out with the power, probing at whatever held and shielded the sword. Her probe touched something and stopped. She could sense which of the five powers had been used here, air and fire and spirit. She could trace the intricate weave made by Saidar, set with a strength that amazed her. There were gaps in that weave, spaces where her probe should slide through. When she tried, it was like fighting the strongest part of the weave head-on. It hit her then, what she was trying to force a way through, and she let her probe vanish. Half that wall had been woven using Saidar. The other half, the part she could not sense or touch, had been made with Saidin. That was not it exactly. The wall was all of one piece, but it was close enough. A stone wall stops a blind woman as surely as one who can see it. Footsteps echoed in the distance. Boots. Egwene could not tell how many there were or from which direction they were coming, but Sylvie gave a start and immediately stared off among the columns.
"He's coming to stare at it again," she muttered. "Awake or asleep, he wants—"
She seemed to remember Egwene and put on a worried smile.
"You must leave now, my lady. He mustn't find you here, or even know you've been."
Egwene was already backing in among the columns, and Sylvie followed, flapping her hands and waving her stick.
"I am going, Sylvie. I just have to remember the way."
She fingered the stone ring.
"Take me back to the hills."
Nothing happened. She channeled a hair-like flow to the ring.
"Take me back to the hills."
The redstone columns still surrounded her. The boots were closer, close enough not to be swallowed in their own echoes anymore.
"You don't know the way out," Sylvie said flatly, then went on in a near whisper, ingratiating and mocking at once, an old retainer who felt she could take liberties. "Oh, my lady, this is a dangerous place to come into if you don't know the way out. Come, let poor old Sylvie take you out. Poor old Sylvie will tuck you up safe in your bed, my lady."
She wrapped both arms around Egwene, urging her further from the sword. Not that Egwene needed much urging. The boots had stopped. He, whoever he was probably gazing at Kalandor.
"Just show me the way," Egwene whispered back. "Or tell me. There's no need to push."
The old woman's fingers had somehow gotten tangled around the stone ring. "Don't touch that, Sylvie."
"Safe in your bed."
Pain annihilated the world. With a throat-wrenching shriek, Egwene sat up in the dark, sweat rolling down her face. For a moment she had no idea where she was and did not care.
"Oh, light," she moaned. "That hurt. Oh, light, that hurt."
She ran her hands over herself, sure her skin must be scored or wealed to make such a burning, but she could not find a mark.
"We are here," Nynaeve's voice said from the darkness. "We are here, Egwene."
Egwene threw herself toward the voice and wrapped her arms around Nynaeve's neck in sheer relief.
"Oh, light, I'm back! Light, I'm back!"
"Elaine," Nynaeve said. In a moment, one of the candles was giving a small light. Elaine paused with the candle in hand and the spill she had lit with flint and steel in the other. Then she smiled, and every candle in the room burst into flame. She stopped at the washstand and came back to the bed with a cool, damp cloth to wash Egwene's face.
"Was it bad?" she asked worriedly. "You never stirred. You never mumbled. We did not know whether to wake you or not."
Hurriedly, Egwene fumbled the leather cord from around her neck and hurled it and the stone ring across the room.
"Next time," she panted,
"we decide on a time and you wake me after it. Wake me if you have to stick my head in a basin of water."
She had not realized that she had decided there would be a next time. "Would you put your head in a bear's mouth just to show you weren't afraid? Would you do it twice just because you'd done it once and didn't die?" Yet it was more than a matter of proving to herself that she was not afraid. She was afraid and knew it, but so long as the Black Aja had those Turangrial Corianan had studied, she would have to keep going back. She was sure the answer to why they wanted them lay in Teleron Riod. If she could find answers about the Black Aja there, perhaps other answers too, if half what she had been told about dreaming were true, she had to go back.
"But not tonight," she said softly. "Not yet."
"What happened?" Nynaeve asked. "What did you dream?" Egwene lay back on the bed and told them. Of it all, the only thing she left out was about Perrin talking to the wolf. She left the wolf out altogether. She felt a little guilty about keeping secrets from Elaine and Nynaeve, but it was Perrin's secret to tell, when and if he chose, not hers. The rest she gave them word for word, describing everything. When she was done, she felt emptied.
"Aside from being tired," Elaine said, "did he look hurt?" "Egwene, I cannot believe he would ever hurt you. I cannot believe he would."
"Rand," Nynaeve said dryly, "will have to look after himself a while longer." Elaine blushed. She looked pretty doing it. Egwene realized that Elaine looked pretty doing anything, even crying or scrubbing pots.
"Kalandor," Nynaeve continued, "the heart of the stone. That was marked on the plan. I think we know where the Black Aja is."
Elaine had regained her poise.
it does not change the trap, she said. If it is not a diversion, it is a trap. Nynaeve smiled grimly.
The best way to catch whoever set a trap is to spring it and wait for him to come. Or her, in this instance.
You mean go to Tyr? Egwene said, and Nynaeve nodded.
The Ammerlin has cut us loose, it seems. We make our own decisions, remember? At least we know the Black Aja is in Tyr, and we know who to look for there. Here all we can do is sit and stew in our own suspicions of everybody, wonder if there is another gray man out there. I would rather be the hound than the rabbit.
I have to write to my mother, Elaine said.
When she saw the looks they gave her, her voice became defensive.
I have already vanished once without her knowing where I was. If I do it again... You do not know Mother's temper. She could send Gareth Bryn and the whole army against Tar Valon, or hunting after us.
You could stay here, Egwene said.
No, I will not let you two go alone, and I won't stay here wondering if the sister teaching me is a dark friend, or if the next gray man will come after me. She gave a small laugh. I will not work in the kitchens while you two are off adventuring either. I just have to tell my mother that I am out of the tower on the Ammerlin's orders, so she won't become furious if she hears rumors. I do not have to tell her where we are going or why.
You surely had better not, Nynaeve said. She very likely would come after you if she knew about the Black Aja. For that matter, you can't know how many hands your letter will pass through before it reaches her, or what eyes might read it. Best not to say anything you don't mind anyone knowing.
That's another thing, Elaine sighed. The Ammerlin does not know I am one of you. I have to find some way to send it, with no chance of her seeing it.
I will have to think on that. Nynaeve's brows furrowed. Perhaps once we're on our way. You could leave it at Arangil on the way downriver if we have time to find someone there going to Camelin. A sight of one of those papers the Ammerlin gave us might convince somebody. We will have to hope they work on ship captains, too, unless one of you has more coin than I have.
Elaine shook her head dolefully. Egwene did not even bother. What money they had possessed had all gone on the journey from Toman Head, except for a few coppers each.
When... She had to stop and clear her throat.
When do we leave? Tonight?
Nynaeve looked as if she were considering it for a moment, but then she shook her head. You need sleep after... Her gesture took in the stone ring lying where it had bounced off the wall. We will give the Ammerlin one more chance to seek us out. When we finish with breakfast, you both pack what you want to take, but keep it light. We have to leave the tower without anyone noticing, remember? If the Ammerlin doesn't reach us by midday, I mean to be on a trading ship, shoving that paper down the captain's throat if need be, before prime sounds. How does that sound to you?
It sounds excellent, Elaine said firmly,
and Egwene said, Tonight or tomorrow, the sooner the better, as far as I can see. She wished she sounded as confident as Elaine. Then we'd best get some sleep.
Nynaeve,
Egwene said in a small voice.
I don't want to be alone tonight.
It pained her to make that admission.
I don't either, Elaine said. I keep thinking about the soulless. I do not know why, but they frighten me even more than the Black Aja.
I suppose, Nynaeve said slowly, I don't really want to be alone myself. She eyed the bed where Egwene lay. That looks big enough for three if everybody keeps her elbows to herself. Later, when they were shifting about, trying to find a way to lie that did not feel so crowded, Nynaeve suddenly laughed.
What is it?
Egwene asked.
You are not that ticklish.
I just thought of someone who'd be happy to carry Elaine's letter for her. Happy to leave Tar Valon, too. In fact, I'd bet on it.